My name is Hank. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome, everybody, and happy Canada Day to you people from Canada, eh? I beg your pardon. It said I'm not supposed to make any special announcements. That's okay. And before I say anything or introduce the speakers and do all the things they've asked me to do here, I want to introduce you to my bride of 50 years just 2 weeks ago, my wife Mary Lou. And then they said I'm supposed to introduce the first speaker, but they said I could say a few words first. And I will say just a few words. I'm originally from Buffalo, New York, and my dad was born up in the Six Nations here in Brantford, Ontario, Canada, so it's like coming home to come up here. And I'm looking forward. We're going over to Brantford Monday, July 4th, and say hello to some old friends and relatives. I was going to say something more about that, but it isn't coming. So the good news is I have speakers. And the first speaker this afternoon, is Patricia S. from Minnesota. Would you help me welcome her?
Hello, everyone. My name is Pat, and I'm an alcoholic. It's really exciting to look out into the audience, and needless to say, I'm pretty nervous. So you'll just have to bear with me for a moment, and let me just catch my bearings here to look out there. It's just overwhelming right now. So anyway, just for my own personal message to you, I just need to step aside and let the Creator come in and speak the message of what needs to be heard here today. So with that, I remember the first time when I'm Ojibwe and Potawatomi. That's my place of origin. I need to say that because that's who I am. I was born a native child into the world, and I was born on a reservation in Wisconsin. And for those of us who are native, we understand what that experience is living on the res and understanding what that means in relationship to high levels of alcoholism. And I wasn't excluded from that experience. On my reservation, my mother was relocating back and forth. She was engaged in her full-blown alcoholism when she was raising me as a single parent. So it kind of gives you a picture. Somebody asked me if I was here for AA or Al-Anon. I said, I'm here for all of it, so it doesn't matter. You know, just like, I cover all bases here, so, you know, just, you know, include me in all of it. So my mother, you know, I'm an adult child of an alcoholic as well as an alcoholic, and on with the multi-generational loss and grief, you know, and on we go. So that kind of gives you some background. Well, anyway, when my mother was unstable as a result of her drinking, she would escape her reality by running to another community because she was trying to, you know, the community was her problem, you know, so she would just move on to the next, you know, city. And so Chicago was the central location for a lot of natives who were relocating at that time, and so she relocated our family to Chicago. And I remember the first time I drank, I was 5 years old, and my aunt, my mother's older sister, came home and she had some beer, and she had a son. His name is Pat. My name is Pat, too. I'm the female. He's the male, Pat. So his name was Patrick. I'm Patricia, and that was my older male cousin. And for us in Ojibwe culture, our first cousins are like our brothers and sisters, so he was like my older brother. And so anyway, so here's Pat's mom. She comes home. She has some, I think it was cans of beer, if I can recall. And I remember sitting in the living room with Pat, and she said, well, we call him Cecil. And she says, well, you know how that goes, you know. And so then anyway, you know, so me and Cecil are sitting in the living room. My auntie comes in, and she has her packs of cigarettes, and she has her alcohol or whatever. And me and him are sitting there. My mom is sitting there and everything. And she's like, you know, why don't you kids take a drink? And I was 5, and Pat was 6, or Cecil was 6 years old at the time. And I was like, really, she said, no, it's okay, you know, and I could see there was some hesitation from my mama, you know, she's like, no, don't do that, she said, no, drink, just go ahead and drink, you know. And remember that children only mind their environment, right? They're reflecting what's out there, okay? What they're learning, their learned behavior is what their experience is, right? You know, it's not like some magical prodigy where children just like know how to survive and live. It's just something that they learn as they go along. So anyway, so what happens is I take up the offer at 5 years old, and I pick up the drink, and, you know, I really liked it. At 5 years old, I'm thinking, I wonder if I'm, like, FAE, yeah? You know, I just kind of, like, filtered through my mother into me and stuff like that, you know? And, because my love for it, the first drink I had at five, I automatically loved it, believe it or not. I mean, and I just loved the taste, and I loved how I started to feel. You know, it just made me feel so magical and like was a princess and stuff, and it was great, you know. And my aunt was like, well, here, smoke a cigarette too while you're at it, you know. Well, why not, you know? I'm only minding my environment, and she's giving me permission, and it's okay with my mom. So here's me and Cecil smoking cigarettes, drinking beer, and the next thing you know, I'm loaded, right? It didn't take much. I was five, but I really loved it, you know. It's just like, have more. You know, at 5 years old, it's like, can I have more? And then the next thing you know, she's like, do whatever you want to do. Say whatever you want to say. Well, of course, me and Cecil started swearing because that's what we know around us, right? And so I remember this moment when we're really loaded, me and my cousin, Patrick, and we're smoking cigarettes and we're drinking and, you know, we're miming the adults around us and we're swearing. And I remember my aunt saying, see how they are. See how they are? And I'll never forget that. You know, it's like, where was the, I don't know, that was kind of strange to me. It was just like a major setup, but it sure felt good along the way. But anyway, I didn't realize that until, you know, I was older, but it really felt like something very magical and very powerful and very embracing to me. And that was the first memory I have of my actual drinking. I don't know if my mother was feeding me alcohol before that, but I sure liked it when I tasted it, I'll tell you that. And the next time I got loaded, I was 8. Now, you have to think, like, I'm living in an alcoholic environment. And for those of you who know what that's about, you know that we develop some very keen survival skills at a very early age. And so, and we get clever, and we get very methodical, and some people would call it scheming, I call it strategic planning, okay, all right, you know. And so anyway, here we're up north for the 4th of July, up on the res, and we're at my grandpa's house. Again, my mother moved on to another city because, you know, this, you know, everyone else was the problem and not her. So we go back to the res for a visit for the weekend, and here my mom is. She's getting loaded, the relatives are getting loaded and everything else, and me and my cousin, Cheryl, we called her Bummy, you know how that goes. So anyway, so Cheryl and I are up late at Grandpa's, that's where we're all staying, and my Aunt Shirley's there also from another town, and my Uncle Chet, her husband's car was there. And it's about 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, and we walk over to the car, and we're kind of running around in the streets because everybody's loaded, everybody's passed out, everybody's drunk, right? You know, this is fun. You know, we have freedom. You know, I'm 8 years old. I have all this freedom. There's no adult supervision around. This is the life. I mean, come on. You know, for an 8-year-old kid. And so anyway, we walk over to my Uncle Chet's car, and I look, and the window's open about an inch. You know, well, Cheryl wasn't like strategically like a strategic planner like I was. She just kind of went along with the plan. And so I said, hey, you know, we got to get this car door open. And back in the day, this is when the locks, you could pull them up. You had to manually pull them up and manually pull them. So we found this old television antenna wire. I don't know if you all remember what that is. It's that brown, archaic stuff. I said, hey, check that out. You know, so she had it was about maybe 2 feet long. And I said, hand that to me, you know. She hands me antenna wire, and I slip it, and I unlock the car door. Voila, you know, we're in the car. Well, lo and behold, there's 2 quarts of beer there, right, and a couple packs of cigarettes, and Cheryl had a quart, and I had a quart, and we were smoking, we were drinking, and I loved it again. You know, it was another opportunity for me to just embrace this intoxicating, alluring wonderful experience. I'm like, yeah, this is great. So we're smoking cigarettes and we're laughing, and all of a sudden I hear a knock on the window. And I look and it's my mom. It's like 2:30 in the morning, and she's like, open up the car door. I'm like, uh-uh. By now I'm really courageous because I'm drunk, right? And I can say whatever I want. I'm angry. Like, no. And she goes, open up the car door now. And I'm like, no. And so she goes, if you don't open up the car door, I'm going to go get your Uncle Chad's keys, and I'm going to open up the car. And I open up the car, and this puff of smoke comes out of the car, right? And I turn over to look at my cousin Cheryl, and she's puking her guts out on the other side of the car, right? But this was a really warm experience for me, you know. My mom gets in the back seat of the car because Cheryl and I are in front of the car, and my mom's like, she's beginning to realize in her kind of like coming out of her own stupor that something's not right with her daughter when I ask her at 2:30 in the morning if she'll go get us some more beer. So mom, just go get us some more beer. She's like, what? You know, she's all horrified, or at least she acted like it, you know. So that was my next early age drinking experience. And then from that point on, I began to just kind of follow my mother's path with her drinking and her using, and not knowing that my mother, would not only was she chemically dependent, but she was MI. She was MICD. But I didn't know that till I got older. Okay, I mean, because you just kind of live in the environment and you survive the environment. You really don't understand the psychological ramifications of what's going on in those kind of, like, environments when you're growing up. So I just went along with the program with my mom. So wherever she went, me and my brother went along with her. And we just kind of traveled with her drinking episodes and her using episodes. And pretty soon I become 13, 14 years old. And now I'm a little bit older. And I know that when I drink, that it's going to give me another state of reality that I really like. And so then I start to drink again at 13, 14 years old. And pretty soon, my mother moves again, moves again, moves again. I mean, by the time I was 14, I was in 28 different schools, if that kind of gives you any idea of what it was like. So anyway, by the time I get to be 14 years old, and at the time I was living in Wisconsin, how many of you are from Wisconsin? Anybody here? Oh, that's where I'm originally from Lac du Flambeau, right? In Wisconsin, back in the day, you could drink with your parent. It didn't matter how old you were, as long as you were with your parent. Well, I was with my parent, and she took me in the bars when I was 14 years old, and I was having some fun, let me tell you. You know, it's like, I felt so empowered because, one, I wasn't stuck home babysitting. You know, that was my escape out. And two, I was back to that feeling of, like, euphoria. One more time again. And I just said, you know, I just love this feeling. It just makes me feel so alive, and it just makes me feel so good. And all I want to do is feel like this all the time. And at that time, in my early stages of drinking, I didn't have hangovers. I just had this warm, fuzzy feeling when I woke up. So I'm like, what is everybody talking about when they're like, they're so sick? I didn't get it. I didn't get the correlation yet. Okay, between my drinking and what people were talking about when they were so hungover they couldn't function as a human being, and how sick my mom was when she would come off her drunk. I just couldn't get it, and I didn't understand it because I was still early on in my using, that I just didn't understand it. And so progressively through the time that I was drinking, through the years, by the time I'm 16, 17, and I continue to use, and I'm drinking with my mom and I'm drinking with my family, so it's just one big happy family affair, and everyone's enmeshed in alcoholism and drinking and using, and there is no really distinguishable difference between rules and non-rules, and we really don't know that because that's the kind of upbringing I was brought up in. So I became, you know, the flip side of the parental role, if you understand what I'm talking about. So I ended up kind of like leading the family, so to speak, and caretaking my mom a lot and helping her out through her using. And so anyway, at 18 years old, I become a little bit of a political activist. And I walked across the United States in respect to some political activism that was going on in the United States at the time, and some policies that would have had an adverse effect on Natives. And I quit drinking at that time. At 18 years old, I was committed to not drinking. I met the man of my dreams. Anyway, so then, you know, Anyway, so then what happens is I end up becoming pregnant, and I decided that I wasn't going to use anymore. And so, but the rest of my family around me continued to use. And at 18 years old, that's a pretty big thing to give up when the whole rest of the world around you is using, and I'm also on the verge of being a really wonderful drinker, and not to mention a lot of fun. And so all my friends around me realized I'm not drinking, but this is really critical to understand is that I did not go to AA when I quit drinking. I just quit cold turkey, and I'm going to tell you that it's not a very good path to walk. It really is not. Because I didn't really understand how to live in recovery. I just understood not drinking. I didn't understand, like, what it was like to recover emotionally, mentally, spiritually, or physically. I put a cork in the bottle. I was physically sober, but not anything else. Okay? And, some people have talked to me about the years of sobriety, and they say, well, I have 20 years, I have 30 years. And I said, I really don't care how many years you have as long as you have the quality of the program and you're living it one day at a time. You could live 3 years, be sober 3 years, 2 years, 1 year, as long as you're doing the program the way it needs to be done. That's quality program AA, and that's the way I feel about it. Anyway, I know that I only have a very limited time span here, so 5 more minutes. All right, and so then anyway, through the use of drugs and alcohol and everything, I was basically on a dry drunk for 4 years. I lost my son, my baby, very tragically through the use of drugs and alcohol through my mother's hands, and she ended up murdering my son, and so. That was really hard to take. That's still very hard to take. I had a brother commit suicide at 25. He was drinking. He was depressed. He checked out. His son died 3 weeks ago, drunk. He is 18 years old. So my recovery has been about a great deal of loss and grief and pain through the hands of drugs and alcohol, and to live through that, and to survive through it. And if it wasn't for the members of AA, I don't think I could have made it here today. I didn't want to get emotional, but sometimes you just got to get real, And I know that many people say that tears are very healing, but sometimes pain in this program gets so deep. And if there was any time that I wanted to relapse, it was 3 weeks ago when my nephew was killed. He was drunk. And this seems to be the pattern in my life where I have lots and lots of loss as a result of drugs and alcohol. I got sober in 1991. I quit drinking in 1990, but I got clean and sober in 1991, if you understand what I mean. And so, anyway, that's how many years I've been in this program. Again, if it wasn't for the program of AA, I wouldn't be standing here today to give you the testimony that I'm giving you today. I don't know how I would live without AA. I don't want to live without AA. You're my family. You're my existence. You're why I'm here today. I'd like to thank the International for inviting me here to speak and testify before you about my experience, strength, and hope in my recovery. I'd like to thank Dino for helping me get here. A friend of mine in AA, another friend in AA helped me get here. Thank you. And I'd like to thank all of you for taking the time to come in here and listen to my story and the rest of the panelists today. Thank you so much for your time, your energy, and your prayers. And thank you for your sobriety for today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Pat. I got nervous when you said something about back in the day. I wanted to share the fact that I was a proud member of the East Central region of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you. And my home group was the Princeton group in Princeton, Illinois for 30 years. And now, those fortunate people, new friends of mine down in Tennessee, have me in their group, if you know what I mean by fortunate. I'm trying to teach them humility. I'm not doing too well yet. Thank you again, Pat. Now, with pleasure, Gary. They say he's from New York.
My name's Gary. I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Seneca Territory in western New York. My home group is Gahatagong, which is a Seneca word for in the woods. That's the name of our home group. I've been very fortunate to have a sobriety date of 1990, March 4th. I have 15 years of sobriety. And, these words expect a miracle, and that is a miracle. Where I come from in my life, I've been on a journey ever since I put the drink down in 1990. And the best is yet to come, and all of those things that were told to me have come in close to full circle. And I continue on this journey. And I have so many people to thank. There's a lot of friends here from other groups that I associate and participate with. Seven Clan from Tuscarora, Silver Trail, and there's other groups that I have participated in and other people that have helped me so much that, again, it's just a miracle that I can even stand here. I'm very nervous and having a hard time, but I think I could get over that. I felt a little bit better that I've seen some people from home and around that I know. That I know in Alcoholics Anonymous, there are no strangers. There's only people that we haven't met yet. I'd just like to say a little bit about my days of abusing alcohol. Like Pat had said, that she grew up in an alcoholic environment. I also, and for a long time, I blamed my environment, and I blamed the people around me. But I know now that it was me. And there's a prayer that we have, and it says that we ask for strength to fight our greatest enemy, myself. And I understand that today. And that's what I try to do. And I grew up in an ironworking family with many brothers and sisters. And alcohol was a part of our household. Not our household so much, but in our life. And when I was a teenager and even younger, there was not a question of if I was going to drink. I would say, I can't wait until I drink. And when I would look at the people around me, some of my brothers and my peers and other people, I would say, I'm not going to be like them. I'm going to drink and have a good time and socialize, but I'm not going to do this, and I'm not going to do this, and I'm not going to do this. And the reality of it is, by the time I was 18 years old, I was worse than all of them. They wouldn't even drink with me. You know, I didn't know that at the time. I just didn't have time to even bother with them because I was so busy drinking. And but all of those things that were told to me came true of what would happen. But I'm a typical alcoholic. I remember having a conversation with my sister, who was in Alcoholics Anonymous in 1970. And she asked me if I thought that I was having a difficult or a problem with alcohol. And I told her no. And I honestly felt that. I said, no, I don't have a problem, because everybody that I hang around with and everything that they do, I do. And to me, it's normal, which is true. But at the time, that was drinking alcoholically and abusing alcohol. And there were a lot of consequences and a lot of tragedy and a lot of things that come along with that. And, you know, so I continued to, I went on to college, and I came back to the reservation, and I became an iron worker. And I wanted to blame the iron workers for the drinking. It wasn't the iron workers. It was me. Because there are a lot of iron workers that are live healthy, good families, and are very productive. But then there's others, too, just like in any other trade or any other group of people. And I came back to the reservation and became an iron worker, and it was an alcoholic haven for me, because I was able to drink the way I wanted to drink. And the only reason why I was in that trade was because of the money. And, you know, it's a job that a lot of natives are a part of. And but the lifestyle was very hard for me, and I had very many consequences. I have 7 children, and I began losing those children. My oldest son, I lost him out of my life because of. I lost him out of my life because of my drinking. He's 29 years old. And then I had 2 more children, 2 daughters, and my drinking. I had to take those 2 daughters to my sister and tell her that I couldn't take care of them. And it was fortunate enough for them that she took care of them. And in 1986, I had another daughter. And in 1988, I had another son. And all of this time we were drinking, the mother and myself. It was a very dysfunctional family. And it was based on alcoholism and drinking, and there was a lot of difficulty. And in 1989-1990, I was facing the same thing, that I was going to lose my other 2 children because of my drinking and alcoholism. So I had to make a choice whether I was going to continue drinking. And I lost a lot of other things: my license, my job, my children, my home. And all I wanted to do was drink. I worked to drink. That slogan, I lived to drink, and I drank to live. And that was me. And I was a functional alcoholic, and I was able to work. And they would ask me, how can you work on these buildings and work on these bridges in the condition that you're in? And I would think, how can I not work on this because of the condition that I was in? I needed that to drink. And I continued on in that, and it brought a lot of difficulty. And so I had to make a choice in 1990. I went to family court on the Seneca Nation, and I told them that I was going to stop drinking, and that I was going to straighten out my life, and I was going to take care of my son and my daughter. And my father had left a home for us. And he had passed away in 1983. And I went into that court and I told them that I was going to quit drinking and that I was going to take care of my family and I was going to be a productive person. And they kind of just looked at me and said, yeah, but we know you. And they were right. They were 100% right. And I went to, in that court, made a decision that they were going to allow me to have custody of those two children because they couldn't take them away from me because they had to give me the opportunity to be a parent. And I was totally lost. And they talk about the last house on the block. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for my family and to try to get life straightened out so that I could continue to be a parent and to be with my loved ones. Because I would leave the reservation and go to a lot of places because I have an international union card and I could work in a lot of different places. But no matter where I went, all I wanted to do was be home with my family, and I would drink and wonder why I'm there and not home. And I was always running, and the problem was that I had to take Gary with me, and everywhere I went, he was there. And so they gave me this opportunity to be a parent of these two children, but I knew that I couldn't do it myself because I would continue drinking. And I found Alcoholics Anonymous, and I went to a meeting that I remember, Sober Trail. And at this Alcoholics Anonymous meeting were my friends, peers, people I drank with, relatives, people that I know all my life. And I walked in there, and I told them that I parked my car in the back in the parking lot because I didn't want anybody to know that I had a drinking problem. They said, well, here, have a seat. You're in the right place. And, of course, you know, I got a resentment, and I got all kinds of bent out of shape about it because, you know. And maybe a few years later, this light bulb came on, and it was, I can't believe that I said that. These people watched me for 20 years, riding up and down the reservation, throwing beer cans out and waving at them in a different way. And so, but that's how it is. I'm always the last one to know. I'm always the last one to know about anything. And fortunately, they were willing to help me. And they told me things like, Gary, you don't have to live that way anymore. And I said, you know, that's a good thing. You know, I like that. But you don't know me, and you don't know how it is. And you're not going to crack this nut. I'm not going to get through. You're not going to get through to me. And I will participate with you, but I know I'm doomed, and it's not going to happen. And because I lived in a lot of self-defeating behavior, and I lived with a lot of low self-esteem, and I lived with existence and surviving. I had a lot of skills to do those things and to stay drunk. And but they were there. The hand of Alcoholics was there. Alcoholics Anonymous was there. And they were willing and able to help me if I was willing. I didn't have very much honesty. I didn't have very much open-mindedness, but I had a very little tiny bit of willingness that I was willing to participate because the reality of it is I had no place else to go. I thought about leaving Alcoholics Anonymous, those meetings. I would sit there and look at the clock and I wanted to be somewhere, but where could I go? And the sad part was there was only three places that I could go that I could think of, to the bar, to the liquor store, and to my cousin and friend's house to continue drinking. And that was the best idea that I could come up with on my own. And so they were able to help me, and they were able to spend time with me, and they were willing to participate. And the journey began. I'd like to tell you that, you know, things got better. No, they didn't. You know, when I stopped drinking, things got worse because I had to face reality, and I had to live sober, and I had to do things, you know, like they would say, show up and grow up. You know, when I was approximately, I think, 37 years old, and I didn't like to be told to grow up. I didn't like to be told anything. That was the best thing that they told me. And that slogan, show up and grow up. Because I didn't know how to live sober. I did not know how to do anything sober. I didn't do anything sober. And that's why I continue today to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I participate in meetings and service unity and recovery. Because I'm able to still continue to learn how to live sober. And that's what it's about for me. And you say we have to give it away to keep it. Last Sunday, our home group, Gahada Gong, celebrated our 4th year anniversary. And we meet outside in the woods during the summer in the warm months, and we have a campfire. And it's very a unique place, and it's a very spiritual place, and there's a lot of people that come there, and there's a lot of healing and a lot of unity, and people from Seventh Clan and Tuscarora participate, and other nearby groups come, and we're able to share. And it's really a good thing to see that this can continue. You know, that this thing that I was told about, you know, they said, you have to change one thing. Okay, I'll buy, what is it? Everything. And it still stands true, and that is true. But, you know, I can't change everything overnight. And it takes a long time to change. And I have to go through a lot of things, but one thing at a time. And it's process in this this program of recovery. It takes time. It took me a long time to get to where I was, and it's going to take me a long time to continue to get better, to grow and change physically, mentally, spiritually, and emotionally. And I can't do it alone. This has to be a we thing. And I'm not alone. There is one thing that I know that I've gained from Alcoholics Anonymous, that I'm never alone, that I'm a phone call away, that I can find a group, find a meeting, find other recovering alcoholics to help me. And I've gone to a lot of places, and everywhere that I've gone, I've found Alcoholics Anonymous. And it really works. You go there and you look in that phone book and you call central office and you ask them where a meeting is, and they tell you where it is. It's amazing. It's just like when they told me I had to pick up that 300-pound phone and ask for help. I always had an excuse why I couldn't do that. But I just want to say that this journey that there was so much fear in my life and so much difficulty that the people in Alcoholics Anonymous were there and they told me things like, Gary, you can't help your family, your children, your job, your community. You can't help anybody or anything until you learn how to help yourself. And I didn't like to hear that, but it was true. And I had to set out. And this was the hardest thing that I've ever done in my life, but yet it's the best thing I've ever done. And I tell people that come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I tell them that they don't have to live the way they're living, that it can change and it can get better, and they can grow physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, and that. You know, and I've been able to have a lot of miracles in my life since I've come into recovery. Since those two children were with my sister, I had two more children. And I have 7 children in my family, and we have 5 grandchildren. And, you know, I'm there. That's what's important, is that they know that I'm there. They know that I'm going to a meeting. They know that I will be back, and they know that I love them, and I can tell them that. And when I pray every day for them and for my recovery, it's an action thing. And it just works because that's what Alcoholics Anonymous does. You know, that thing about, I used to ask questions, silly questions in the beginning. They said there's no silly questions in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had the nerve one day to ask, why do you guys keep reading How It Works at every meeting? So the last meeting I was at, they read How It Works. And the one before that, and the one before that. Why do you guys keep reading? And I said, it's because it's how it works. So I had to continue on and with those things, you know. I had a sponsor one time that told me that I needed to get patience. And I said, okay, how do I get patience? He said, if you want patience, Gary, you have to just wait. And you know, that is so true, because I am powerless. And there's nothing that I can do about it but wait. And I'm just so grateful for this anniversary and this birthday, 70 years of Alcoholics Anonymous. 70 years, it's amazing that there was not a solution. There was not a way of helping ourselves. I think about the people 100 years ago that had alcoholism, or there was nowhere to go. There was nothing to do. They just had to suffer and to die from it. You know, they say jail, institution, or death, which is true today. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous and because of that triangle, service, unity, and recovery, and the hand of Alcoholics Anonymous, there is help and there is a solution. And for that, I am grateful. And I thank all of you for inviting me. Yelly.
Thank you, Gary the Seneca. Mary Lou and I were traveling through southeastern New York, and we stopped at the Seneca Reserve. And I told the gentleman there, my dad was a Mohawk, and I apologize over the fact that in the day we had the Mohawks watching the eastern door, the Senecas watching the western door. I said, we didn't do too good a job. He said, don't feel bad, neither did we. I had opportunity to serve at the 36th and 37th General Service Conference. And in the 37th, they came up with this pamphlet, AA and Native Americans. And I thought, wait a minute. They already have a pamphlet that takes care of all of us called, Do You Think You're Different? But then I found out, too, that the pale faces do the same as the Indians. We have sweat lodges. They have detox units. After 7 years of sobriety, I was, with the help of my wife, able to start a business in Illinois. And with her help, I said, honey, there's a place down in Kentucky. A guy down there is a sales rep, and he calls it the Sales Connection. I said, I dig that. That's pretty good. What do you think? She said, why don't you call yourself the Mohawk Connection? I said, I like that. So we had a bunch of cards printed up. And as I'd go around Illinois selling the products, had purchasing agents who would come out and say, I don't buy anything you're selling, but I had to see what a Mohawk Connection looked like. I don't know where you could have more fun than an international convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. And tonight, you're all in for a real treat when that flag ceremony takes place. Speaking of spiritual, which it all is, we have Priscilla from Arizona. Priscilla.
Priscilla, I'm an alcoholic. And let's see, my sobriety date is January 10th, 1988. My home group is Alcoholics Anonymous, period, group in Page, Arizona. We meet once a week. It's a closed meeting, and it's a good meeting, usually. And I say that we're in remote communities. Our hometown is about 7,000 people. And when I first came into the fellowship, I was the only woman in those rooms, and I used to think, am I the only women alcoholic in Page, you know? But, you know, I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous because it definitely has changed my life. And I'm here with my spouse, Clay, and we've been together over 38 years. And I think, in fact, tomorrow is our anniversary. So I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope with you all. And I didn't know which way to say Toronto, Ontario, Canada, or was it Ontario, Toronto, Canada. But this is a beautiful country that we have. I haven't been back east, you know, in many parts, but it's so beautiful. I was kind of sad driving through some of the countryside, just again, thinking about the ancestors, you know, and it touched my heart. And I always go there, and I start thinking about my ancestors and how we got to be here, how you know, people, the migration and all that. And but I always come back to now and today, and today I'm just so grateful for who I am and what I have and, you know, what I want to be. And it's true what it says here on our program. I am responsible. I know and understand what that means. It seems like today I do live and breathe and talk Alcoholics Anonymous. A little bit about myself. I'm from the Diné. I'm a Diné. My father is part Hopi. My mom is part Zuni. And I'm registered with the Navajo tribe in Arizona. And we're a large tribe. And yes, we too on the reservation are experiencing a lot of problems with alcohol and the disease of alcoholism. And I'm just grateful that I can today carry the AA message in sobriety because I've got to just pass this message on to our people and to others. And that seems to be what I am responsible means, you know. And back, and I just also think about Bill W. and Dr. Bob and how they found that the missing link was one alcoholic talking to another. That was the missing link. And I do a lot of traveling today for Alcoholics Anonymous, and it seems like that's what it's about for me today. Back when I was drinking, I had no idea that Alcoholics Anonymous existed, you know. I had no idea what was going on with me, why I was so in disease in life, you know. I just didn't know. I didn't understand that. I was born in the Hogan, and my grandmother was a medicine woman, and she delivered me. And so I'm an earth person. I like my feet on the earth. You know, I like being out in the desert, around nature, in the environment. And just that, I can take that with me into the city of New York City, and know I'm going to be okay because Alcoholics Anonymous have made me feel that I'm okay. You know, that I do belong, I'm part of this universe. And no matter where I go today, I'm okay. I'm going to be all right. And the biggest surprise to me when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous was that I had to include God or my Creator in my life. And today I can understand why. I didn't when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought, Why is that step two and three in there? Why do I have to find a God of my understanding? I thought all I want to do is put the can of beer down. That's all I want to do. And so I've come a long way since that feeling. And today, I ask my Creator to speak through me. Use me as a channel. Carry that message to somebody who might want to hear a message today, that this is a program of recovery and it does work. It gave me so much hope when I got here, opened the doors to the rooms of AA, and somebody had their hands out to me to welcome me. And I found myself that person, after a while, that I can put my hand out and welcome that person who comes through that door. And that's what it's been about ever since I got to these rooms. And today, I think back about that problem I had, you know, where I was blaming everybody for my problems and found myself falling off the bar stool. And that was as far as I would go. And all the things, the flip side of recovery, what it looked like, it was very painful, very sad. I had no hope in those days, you know, because I thought, boy, why is this happening to me? And I would wake up and say, this is going to be my last, I'll just have one drink. And the end of the day, I'll be drunk, you know. And when I reached out for help, AA was there for me. And I think about that, and it's been quite a trip since that day. I remember I was so emotional, and, you know, I just was so happy that there was others like me. I was so happy that they gave me that hope that I can, you know, recover from this disease of alcoholism. And I was also made aware that it's not only the 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous that work, you know. It was the 12 traditions, which is the group, you know, that we all have to be in this together. I can't do it by myself. I need you all to help me. And also there was the 12 concepts. And I am in service, like it says in our fellowship, the three legacies, recovery, unity, and service. All that is like finding a balance, you know, in my life to use. And I love the steps. I've done, when I did the fourth and fifth and with a sponsor, you know, I just felt so free that there was something that was happening. There was a new light in my life. And it's like the steps led me, kept continuing to lead me down that road that sometimes I'm not sure where it's going to take me. But it's always to a good place as long as I'm have the courage. You know, the principles behind those steps are true. You know, I had to have the courage to take the steps. And I can't just come in and out of these AA rooms and expect to change. I have to be in the action of these steps. Do something. When I have a question, I just make a decision, whether it's right or wrong. Just do something, you know. Then I find out whether it was right or wrong. And, you know, and but today I don't keep doing the same thing over and over again, you know. I make things happen. And when I was young, I was just a scared person. I didn't know why I felt lonely all my life, why I had a feeling of abandonment. And I went through the boarding school system. And I wanted my mother, when she was, you know, when I was 5 years old, my mom and dad to tuck me in, and they were not there. So I grew up being real needy, being real lonely, feeling like abandonment, you know. So when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, those are some of the things that I looked at. And the flip side was that I found a beautiful person there that's strong and courageous, that can handle things without drinking and running to the booze. And I know where that comes from, that power that it says in the big book. It comes from God, my creator. As long as I wake up every morning and pray and say, God, you are my employer. You are my director. What do I need to do? And I always say that God lays out the agenda for me every morning to follow. I just need to pay attention throughout the day and revisit God every day, every minute if I have to. And my life and my days go well. And we were a family, my spouse and I, being in our relationship, he's Irish, so and being Native American, you know. When we drank, boy, it was not fun. So, but with Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, he came into the fellowship also. So with the AA in our lives have changed today. And we definitely, you know, support each other. He's got his program of recovery and I've got mine. And I want to stop here and say thank you to the Al-Anon Fellowship, because Al-Anon has really helped me and my family. It saved our lives. It saved our children's lives. We have three adult children today, and they saw the majority of our drinking. And today, two of our kids, our older son and our younger son, are sober through result of Alcoholics Anonymous. They've got a, they came into the program a year after I got sober. They had to really, we all had to have a real awakening. It was not, you know, some of it was painful. But we all grew up together in Alcoholics Anonymous. And our younger daughter is in Al-Anon, and she is coming along pretty well. And we have four, our sons have four children each, so we have eight grandchildren, and then our daughter just had a baby, so that's nine. And none of those grandkids have seen their parents or grandparents drunk. So that's a big motivator to me. You know what? The solution is being offered here in these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. All because I got honest and I made a commitment to this fellowship. Through sponsorship, I have some beautiful friends present in this room today. There's quite a few people that have come into my life. Of course, you know that I'm good here because I know that you're all friends, you're family. That's what I've been told here when I got here. So I got people sponsoring me, and I had a beautiful lady who took me through the steps. She knew how to use the language to get me to understand it. She took patience and time with me. I had to drive from Arizona into Colorado to do these steps, because in our small town, we don't have the luxury of big towns where we can take our pick of people to ask to sponsor us. So, but that beautiful lady, she was about 73 years old. She took me through the steps, and she passed away not too long ago. And but I hear her words today, and that's the words I give to the ladies that I sponsor today. I pass that on, so her spirit is here. The words she taught me, the way to take the steps, I passed those on. And I was in Albuquerque after my sponsor passed away, and I asked a lady there to sponsor me. And we're working at it, the long-distance sponsorship. And sometimes it's not where I can go over there and do the steps, but it might be just a phone call to say, hi, I'm still sober, you know. And so sponsorship is very important to me. I need some, you don't know sometimes how you're sponsoring me, you know, when you meet me. You're my role model. So I'm careful to, you know, I listen. And so you don't know who you're going to sponsor today. And, you know, the purpose for me is to carry the AA message here. And I've learned how to do that through sponsorship and also doing the steps and understanding what the principles it's all about. I was surprised, like I said, when I found that spirituality was going to be part of my recovery program. Creator God in my life. I love the way Alcoholics Anonymous works, you know. I found out soon, right when I got here, what the difference was between an AA meeting and being a group, AA group. And what it meant to be for me to be part of a group. That was living in the action, being a part of, making things happen. And at the service level, I do a lot of AA service at, they call it the area. We're Arizona area is 03. We have our Arizona delegate here, our chair, our alternate chair. There's quite a few people that are in service. You know, I see a lot of these people doing their job, and it just motivates me more to stay involved. A lot of times I think, well, you know, I've been at this. I think I'll kind of step out of it. No, it doesn't happen, you know. It just somehow I just keep getting more and more involved. And last year we drove every weekend out to the reservation there. We started up some meetings, and there's one special meeting that was happening in the Hogan once a month, and we would do a workshop. We did step one in January where everybody present took step one. The next month we did step two, and everybody there took their second step. So those are some of the things we were doing. And during Christmas, that was a Saturday, so we were out at the reservation having a potluck speaker meeting that day. We showed up, and they said, well, would you guys like to share, you know, be the speakers? A lot of times it's like we're always asked to be of service, and I'm always willing to do that. And out there, we do have to drive many miles to these meetings, and, you know, it might be 200 miles one way. And I learned how to be self-supporting when I first got here. And putting that money in the hat or the basket has taught me to learn how to be self-supporting, not only in Alcoholics Anonymous, but in my own personal life. I pay my way. I pay my bills. And that has empowered me, you know. And I do. It gives me a good feeling that I can do it. I can do it, you know. And today we wake up in the morning and do a prayer meditation session. And I do a lot of reading because I'm open to learning. And many years we do a lot of reading out of the big book. There's a section in the big book where you, upon awakening, you know, we read that. And then upon retiring, we read that. And we do some reading in the morning. And nowadays we've been doing some other readings. Like today we have a reading out of Ralph Waldo Emerson every morning, because I need to start, you know, collecting, do some learning, have some knowledge. And those are some of the things. I'm even reading some out of the Bible and stuff like that. And I read about what gnosis means and omniscience, you know, the creator. And those are just something that I'm exploring because I have a need to learn more about who and what I want, where I want to go. So, and I think in the big book it says something about contempt prior to investigation. So, you know, I don't, because I used to sometimes be argumentative, so today you know, stop and say, okay, open your mind and listen and see what it's about. Check it out. The journey over here, and I've also traveled a lot for Alcoholics Anonymous, and every time I get a chance to go, I make an effort. For this international, I made a commitment 3 years ago. I managed to get on the plane, and I went to New York City and visited the GSO building, the offices there. And the people that work there, our trusted servants, are so beautiful. They greeted me as soon as I got off the elevator, and they took me on the private tour. And they said, this is your office. This is your building. Isn't that something? That and we do have a real beautiful building. I think it's a Rockefeller building. It's a pretty nice building. If you haven't had a chance to visit GSO building, you get to sit on Bill W's couch. You get to tour the archives. And I know our archivist from Arizona is here too. Yes, the history is really interesting, and I want to, on the way back home, where we drove up from New York City, we flew from Arizona to New York to visit our daughter and her spouse and our brand new grandson. He's 3 months old. Just so special. And when I first hugged him and greeted him, I said, your ancestors say hi. Here's the hug from them. Yeah, just beautiful. So when we leave back down to New York City, we can go back from Vermont there and go down and visit Bill W's grave, and hopefully we can visit the Stepping Stone also. There is just so much about Alcoholics Anonymous. This has, besides giving me a new way of living, it's just been absolutely wonderful. I have met some wonderful, most special people that you are. My whole family has benefited. My mom and dad are old. They're still alive. But you know what? All I can say to them when I see them out on the Navajo Reservation in their homes is to give them a hug and say, I love you. I too lost some family members to alcoholism. I have a couple of brothers, three brothers that have passed on. In sobriety, I learn about grief and loss, but I see things differently today. Because those people that went on, they're with me. They're okay. My whole way of seeing myself and the world and others have changed. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me all this. I'm so glad you are there and that, yes, we are responsible. I'm so grateful. If you're ever in Page, Arizona, I'm usually given my last name, but if you're ever there, call us up. Come by. You're welcome in my home. You're beautiful people. Thank you.
Thank you, all three of you. Thank you again. There's something else that Bill W. borrowed from Native Americans. You read on page 83, the spiritual life is not a theory, we have to live it. I made that up. Priscilla mentioned sponsorship, and I tell you, I'm definitely a believer in sponsorship. As a matter of fact, to the point where someone I was sponsoring It wasn't working out. He wasn't doing what I tell him to do. So we tried a new tack. I said, how about if you sponsor me? So he called me every day and read from Daily Reflections. And unfortunately, after a year, he fired me. We had a gentleman most of you know by the name of, what was your name? Bob P. He's a past General Service Office manager. And I was there when he gave his final, his farewell. And he finished it with a statement from Bill from Long Beach when Bill spoke at his last international. And I didn't want to put it to memory, so I brought it so I could read it simply. Bill spoke a few gracious sentences about the huge crowd, the outpouring of love, and the many overseas members here, ending, as I remember, with these words. As I look out over this crowd, I know that Alcoholics Anonymous will live 1,000 years if it is God's will. Would you all help me close with the responsibility declaration? And let's see if we can get it right. I am responsible for him anywhere reaches out. I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that I am responsible. Thank you.